Wind Development, David Young, David Walker. He, I don't know, but I can, we'll get into that. He, a lot of this is gonna land on him.
Well, that and the Manson.
Yeah. Look, I don't know if he's got trial. So where things are at right now, you've all received a copy of the draft. That there's about one, two, three issues that are still remain. That question, Sue, Chris, chime in, whatever, remember, I would say something like that. One was decommissioning of the turbines. That will be covered. There was, it's included in the site permit from the PUC, from our insurance.
It will be.
Doesn't our ordinance say that they have to come up with a...
No, it's not.
Estimate for each tower to be commissioned?
So the way the statute works is, it doesn't really matter what our ordinance says. Once it goes through the PUC for some of those factors, then the PUC ruling is what is, supersedes our ordinance, so to speak. So there's state statute out there that discusses decommissioning, what that means. I don't think that many of the wind farms that have been built in Minnesota have followed that state statute to the letter of the law. And honestly, I don't think anybody totally understands how to interpret that. So what they did is they put together a working group commission to look at what does that mean and report back to the PUC on how should we handle this whole issue of decommissioning as part of the site permit. When does that have to happen? What would have to happen? Right now, in the docket that's sitting out there for this wind farm, the PUC has some language in there with discussion on decommissioning, that those costs and the ability to provide those costs for decommissioning, the evidence that the company would be able to provide the cost for decommissioning would have to be provided 14 days prior to construction. I believe that's what the language says right now in the draft language that came out of the last order. It could still change before the final order is listed. They may have something that says 45 days prior to pre-construction. It might say 60 days prior to pre-construction, a pre-construction meeting. I don't know exactly how they want to handle that, but there's been a lot of discussion with this working group on what that means.
And do you have our ordinance so it says decommissioning would part?
I don't have part.
Does anybody have that in their own?
So it's...
Our ordinance says specifically, we've talked about this for 6 months or a year,
right.
Decommissioning is still on the table.
Right. And, but
so I think it's well worth discussing.
But if they include, if it's included in statute, statute's going to trump your own ordinance. That's another point that's going to be down the road. So my understanding is that the statute's going to say that the utility will bear the entire cost of decommissioning and guarantees resources that will allow them to be able to decommission the entire project. So that's coming out of the working group, as we said. So we're not, nothing's going to happen today. It's in there, so we'll follow it to make sure it does happen, and then bring back the board once we have more. Once the written order comes out, which should be in 5 weeks. 4 to 5 weeks, my understanding. So that's the update on the decommission part of it. It'll be a point that we'll have to revisit.
Mr. Chair, may I address that? Decommissioning?
Address the chairman.
Oh, you're the chair.
It's workshop, but we don't usually have public comment in this.
Don't usually.
Well,
I have information regarding decommissioning, if I may, just briefly.
Go ahead.
Okay, decommissioning is addressed in the application requirements. That's Minnesota Rule 7854.0500 at subpart 13. And there's a list of things that they are to include, and they did not. And that's been a constant issue in this proceeding, and one that we will be addressing with the PUC, because they're supposed to include it, including the cost, what they're going to do, financial assurance, that kind of thing, the kinds of things you cover in your ordinance. And they did not include that in the application, nor at any time during the process. So that information still is not in the record, just for your information. I think you should know that.
I was wondering about the towers, if they got one that they got tear down, if there was a dollar amount they paid for that.
And they'd have to guarantee the resources to be able to
You know, there's two ways, you can do bond or paying.
That's still not clear. It just, again, we haven't seen the written, it's not, there's not a written order yet, so this is all somewhat of a guessing game.
Did you say that 14 days prior to
construction?
They got to have that in place for decommissioning?
Let's say the 30 to 45, and that's, that date hasn't, that number hasn't been set yet.
Right now, the draft language in the docket says the permittee shall submit a decommissioning plan to the PUC commission at least 14 days prior to a pre-operation meeting. I have no idea when that is or what that is.
Okay.
And provides updates to the plan every 5 years thereafter, then it goes on to identify things like financial securities, breakdown of costs, the components that would be decommissioned, the labor and equipment required to do that, how they would take out the turbines themselves, how they would take out the foundations, so they have to have that all put together.
Okay.
Fee schedule. This was brought up to our environmental services folk. We have a fee schedule that the board adopted in 2013 on building codes and building fees and whatnot. That came to a rapid standstill because there was differencing of opinion on if Minnesota statute, specifically 216, allows waiver or non-payment of our fees. So I stopped that conversation because that's a question for the attorneys. So David is briefed on that, and he will begin working on that with your Warren Williams attorney and see where that comes at. But again, that goes back to being a legal question, and we didn't have the ability to answer that. That's the first I heard of that. So that one was kicked down the road. And the last item was the right-of-way on the transmission line and where that falls, how that falls into play. Again, a great big unknown. The opinions vary. What we're waiting for again is on more information on if the PUC, what comes out of that written order, if they are going to support the wind farm in that transmission line. So what it boils down to, it's cross-section, as you all probably are aware, they have secured easements on the northwest and the southeast corner. And then what comes into play is the road right-of-way, and since they are not, Three Warren Wind is not a public utility, for them to get a utility permit, but they're not a public utility. But then the argument was made, well, we were granted a permit by the Public Utilities Commission, ergo, why aren't we considered a utility? Going back to, now it's a lawyer question, get back to David, he'll talk to their attorneys and get an opinion on that, because it's not, it's as clear as mud.
Is this where it's going number
120th and...
Is this a non-participants land? Is that why this is an issue?
I don't know if it's not for, so they've got the landowner, it's all one family.
It's two.
You have one member in the northeast, northwest corner, Sinon, one member in the southeast corner of Sinon, the northeast and the southwest have. So now you've got, they abut, then you've got the county road.
No, it's two, not one. Mr. Chair, may I correct something? There are two families, not one. And there's a map of it on the second page of the handout that you all have showing this. It's two families. It's the Andersons and then the Lorenzen.
Picture of where things stand. Honestly, we have less of a clear picture when we start. So, other than that, in regards to your roads, drainage, increasing turn radiuses, everything that Sue put out there is all good. So, everything's protected in that regard. Those are the three parts that are standing out there. We won't know for.
I've got what you're saying. Sue, so what's the closest to our road right away? Tower. 500 feet, is that what you said?
I believe it was. Close to where we're at.
And how many towers are that, was gonna be that close?
I'm gonna tell you that off the top of my head.
Because I'm thinking if it's 500 feet high to the tip, and if for some reason something fell, or it would be on the road right away. I was talking to the state DOT, and they said you can set our right-of-way distances to protect the right-of-way. And, because I was asking about 13, if they were in charge of that, because those towers are really close. And we all know that, if you've gone up there, on the north front. So, knowing that, they probably shouldn't have been that close to the road up there, because they're doing ice mitigation when there's icy conditions, because they're close, rather than tear the towers down. They came in compromise, off the blades, they shut them down, they have a whole procedure that they do when it's icy conditions. And their whole reason is because it's too close. So this is the time, I would think, if we have an opportunity to have further from the right-of-way, now's the time to do it before they're built. You're not gonna do it after they're built. And you're not gonna tear them down, because Hartman isn't tearing them down, because of the ice. So, I think we gotta look at that. And we're the road right-of-way authority here, so, you know, 500-foot towers, maybe they should be seven, maybe they should be, you know.
My understanding of it, I may be wrong, that you can change it, but it won't affect this project. You can't. Basically, what it boils down to, you can't change the horse in the middle of the race. So, you have your ordinance, you have your setbacks, they have applied and started the process under that book.
So you're basically saying this outfit's grandfathered in?
Yeah, you can't
change the rules. We can change it for future.
Right.
Future projects, but this one, they're grandfathered in.
Okay, let's assume that. Can we do icing like they do at certain, the towers that are close, need to have a similar system like they're doing in Hartman?
There is content in the commission docket that does discuss the icing issue and proximity to land, or proximity to roads and buildings, other structures, that they would have to shut the towers down, ensure that there's no ice flow potential.
Okay, that's all in here. That's great.
But, you know, all this language right now that's in the docket is draft
right.
Permit language of what potentially could be in the permit. Doesn't necessarily mean it will be in the permit.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's things that have been discussed to potentially be part of that permit.
So we do the process correctly. How do we get that in the permit? The similar icing, we can actually do sometimes they don't, so they're gonna do this, and this to the closest towers. It's all written out in our department. I'd like to see us take that information and apply it to the close towers.
Is this how much carried over?
The draft permit language is there. They have probably about a month from the date of the hearing and the work the PUC commission did on September 20th before they will issue an official written permit. Once that written permit is there, I believe there's an opportunity there to respond.
After the permit?
May I explain that? Mr. Chair, this is what I do. Okay. In the sheet I handed out, there's a timeline and laid out what the process is. Once the final order is out, there's a 20-day period window for any affected party, which would include the county. It could be anyone other than the family dog. They can do a motion for reconsideration, and that is where, if their language is not in the permit that you would like in there, that's when you can say, this really should be in here, and give that to the commission, and then there's a 10-day answer period. Then the commission thinks about it, has a meeting, and then decides if they are going to consider that, reconsider, add it in, change it. So there is an opportunity after that final order, written order comes out. There's 20 days that you could weigh in on that. So that is an opportunity there.
In my mind, it'd be better to just have a compromise and do it before it gets to that point.
There's no point.
So we just have to wait for the order.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
So it's, long story short, is all the stuff we're talking about, it's kind of different stages of
developer's request. So we'll keep an eye on it. Once the order comes out, I'll let you know when we'll be through it. How long's it going to be, Susan?
Before the order comes out?
How long would that be?
A month or so.
How long is the document itself?
How long till it comes out? A month or so.
What's that? Is that what you're asking, how many pages?
Yeah.
Well, the draft one right now is sitting at 28 pages with some attachments.
That's the permit, not the order.
That's the draft permit.
Right, the order will be on top of that.
So that's where it's at with the agreement, Susan, have you seen it?
Nope.
So is that agreement basically the same as a lot of other ones throughout the state?
I can't answer that.
I thought you, that, that just draft agreement.
Oh, our development agreement?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Development.
Our development agreement is an iterative process where we work with all the counties across southern Minnesota. One farm gets built, they learn something, it gets fed back.
Than India.
We looked at a lot of the components.
Didn't reinvent the wheel.
No, we kind of were using it as an industry standard of how these other farms have been built.
And we can do the same with the Heartland Ice. We should just go look at their permit, look what they've written up. We don't have to write that from scratch either. Looked pretty thorough, I read.
So if there's no other questions or comments, that one? What's that, how we have, like, is it how we have more? Does Pat? Oh, listen to this one.
I have.
So we'll kick Pat back and have Winston give his updates on what he wants to chit chat about.
I had one comment on the collector lines. Under 1.4, it says, I think this is a typo or just a misunderstanding, but it says all collector lines shall be installed at least 5 feet below public drainage tile. Unless a conflict, then a shallower depth could be allowed after approval of the county drainage inspector. We really can't go 5 feet underneath tile lines. I've always advocated for 5 foot of cover on a collector line that would place them underneath the majority of the tile lines. But to require the developer to go 5 feet below, we've got some 4 and 5 and 6 foot tile lines. That would be 10 foot vary. That would be too much. And I don't know what was done in Heartland, but I see Mark Morheim's here. He's probably one of the authorities on what we have done with tile lines and collector lines up there.
So,
want me to speak?
The way the language, though, is written is that a shallower depth can be allowed. If it is a deep tile like that, you can allow a shallower depth. It just isn't, it's something that has to have your review and approval in order to do that.
But to start out at 5 feet below tile lines, wow.
So if there's a tile line that's sitting out there 2 feet or 3 feet, then they'd have to go 5 feet below to get some separation.
I personally said that 5 feet.
I can tell you what we did at Bent Tree if you need to know.
Yeah.
I was involved in all the tile repair on the entire project. They first were only gonna dig them 42 inches deep. And I said, no, not gonna happen on my land. I have 3 turbines on my property. I said, they have to be at least 5 feet deep. Anyway, Holland Contracting from Forest City was the contractor. They said, yeah, no problem, we'll put them 5 feet deep. And away we went, everything went great. We had 1,000 repairs, we only had 10 of them we had to lift up with a strap to fix the tile. So it was pretty successful in my opinion. But they had to be 5 feet of cover.
Mark, how low did they, when they went under a county ditch?
Well, they directional bored those.
Yeah, the directional, they go quite, that's where
they were. Yeah, they were quite deep. They were required to be, I think, 8 or 10 feet below the flow line of the bottom of the ditch.
Yep.
So they socked them down deep. They did a great job of that.
Yeah, but that's with today's technology, that's not a big issue.
We had a couple of tile mains on one project, for instance. There was 3 big tile, and we had them all identified before they came with the trenchers. And like Sue was saying, you could, sometimes you need to go above or below. Well, we did that. We went above one, went deeper, went below the next one, and above the last one. So we only had to fix one tile, basically. But that was by design because we knew what the depths were instead of cutting through all 3 of them, creating a bigger mess. And some of the county tile, they actually directional bored underneath those instead of cutting them. So, because they were so big, and some of them were shallow, and it would have been a huge problem. So they just made them directional bored underneath those also.
And we've got that language in here to directionally bore some of the big county tile. I just picked that up because if it states 5 feet below the tile, wow, that's a deep cut.
At your discretion.
Yes.
A shallower depth could be allowed after.
You can allow it if you want.
Okay.
That means going over it all.
You want it 5 feet or more below the ditch.
Right, and that's in the language too, that it's 5 feet below. It's in here on another one.
Why does it need to be different than the other ones though?
They both are 5 feet deep, 5 feet below. So with the public drainage ditch, we require directional boring.
No, I'm talking about the other wind farm. We're at 5 foot, what's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that, that's what we did here, we're at 5 foot.
There was never a written agreement for bent tree?
No, I understand that, but he's telling me it's 5 foot below the tile and you're saying, or Mark's saying it's 5 foot, now which is right?
5 feet.
We're both saying 5 feet, I'm not sure what.
I'm measuring from the ground level.
You said 5 foot below the tile.
No, that's what the present draft is 5 foot below the tile. I'm saying it should be 5 foot of cover.
Well, I don't want that in
there. There's a difference.
Does the draft say that?
I don't want that in the draft, 5 foot below the tile.
I don't either.
You don't want 5 foot below the tile?
No.
5 foot below the tile, Sue. They don't have to bury it 5 foot below the tile.
Just below.
Only when you're going under a ditch.
So if the tile is sitting here, where do you want the electrical line to go? Over it or under?
Yeah, I would agree with what they did in Bent Tree. You go five, you put them in at 5 foot, and if you happen to, like he said, there was a thousand of them and they had to move. Change 10, put the wire at 5 foot.
Yeah, 5 feet of cover actually was a pretty easy number to use and it worked really well. Because the tile have to be, you know, flow line has to stay intact. You can't have a dip or a hump in it.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so I think we're mixing up the concepts here. On Bent Tree, which we didn't have a written agreement or
right.
document, we had other provisions that were kind of gentlemen's agreements, if you will, with the contractor and through Alliant Energy that said electrical lines should go at 5 feet deep.
Yep.
That way, if anybody wants to pattern tile that farm or whatever, those electrical lines are 60 inches down, you should be able to pattern tile above it, not get in the middle of this collector line. We are silent in this agreement with regards to that concept.
Okay.
There's nothing in here that talks about where they have to put those electrical lines through a private landowner's field, with the exception of wherever they would encounter the public drainage system. That's the only piece that we're addressing through this agreement, is what they have to do when they encounter something that has a public purpose or is on the public drainage system. In that case, we do dictate with these large county mains, we want them to be 5 feet below.
And they already said that, they went under them.
And we have the flexibility to say that, hey, if our main is 10 feet deep and we don't want to go 5 feet below that doesn't make sense. There is opportunity there upon review of the county drainage inspector to vary that and shallow that depth up. So we have some leeway both ways for that. And under a drainage ditch, the same thing. There's 5 feet directionally bored underneath that. And that's what Mark said. When we get to the big county mains, many times the contractor is just going to say, we're not going to dig around your big main. We'll just directionally bore that too. And that's a win-win for us. That's good. We want those electrical lines to be well below our county mains.
Mm.
But we are not discussing, and we do not have language in this that talks about where those electrical collector lines go when it is outside the county public drainage system right away. We don't have any language in here that regulates what happens on private
property. What it does out in the field doesn't matter.
It does too.
And that's the concern I have.
That's his.
Because they could put them at 42 inches deep then when there's not a county road or county tile right away.
And we had this discussion amongst all the county engineers that got together and were reviewing and updating developers' agreements and saying what's worked, what hasn't, the contractors, what. The reason why it's being left out is because this is a developer's agreement protecting county infrastructure, county assets between the county and the developer. Each landowner, when they allow the tower and the collector lines to go on their property, negotiated their own agreements for their private property. That's the party that needs to protect their land. If they want, through my parcel of land, and I got a tower going on my land, and I got electrical collector lines going across my land, that's between me as a private landowner and the developer. to say, I only want those to be 60 inches, I want them to be 60 inches deep or 42 inches deep. The county as a whole doesn't have a stake in what happens on that private landowner's private farm ground.
Keep in mind, though, that the county system is owned by the landowners, not owned by the county. The county doesn't own any tile anywhere.
That's important.
It's all owned by the private citizens that are assessed into that system. So it's still owned by the private individuals, not by the county.
We have this piecemeal everywhere on the private stuff. That could be a real mess. Land gets sold, of course, and obviously it's sold always down the road. And we got a county main, which we'll follow these rules by, but then it gets into the private property. We may be brushing up against that private property tile in the future because it's near the county main. So wouldn't it be better to have a set, Mark, you're the contractor, you're a contractor in this. What would you like to see? So it's the private tile is good for the person that owns the land. And we're going to protect our county tile, obviously, that's happening. Maybe we should take kind of a leadership role with the private people and say, hey, here's what we're doing. You may want to consider this, or...
My caution is that all of these leases have been signed, sealed, and delivered. So they've secured all the leases with all the landowners.
Yeah, but they want it done right, too.
But they're not going to be able to go back once that's signed and agreed upon.
Sure they can.
Somehow, both parties are going to have to...
There has to be some flexibility. And at this point in the permit process, we're not to the end of it.
Does those agreements right now have a set... Maybe you know, Bill, do they have a set depth for the, on your private tile?
We've talked about the 5-foot thing. I'd have to go back and rewrite the language. But when we go forward, we're talking about 5 feet. On new development, we're talking about 5 feet.
That's not the contract.
I looked in my Bentry contract, and there was nothing in there about depths.
There usually isn't.
So, but it was like you said, a gentleman's agreement between myself and Holland Contracting. And thank God I talked him into it because it could have been a disaster.
Mm. That's important.
But.
So it's probably not either.
Well, if there's something that we can write that, because we are the drainage authority, Mark, so we can make that claim for the, at 5 foot for the county.
I feel you can, right.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you.
And can we suggest that to the landowners that they agree with that? I mean, so we've got a, like Dan said, we've got one landowner if this is all written down, okay, but if it's not, I mean, if everybody knows that they're at 5 foot and there's a problem.
Set a standard.
Yeah. But I mean, I understand there might be some landowners that don't agree with that, and if that's the case, well, then I don't know. I guess they have to do what they got to do. But
there's
some documentation.
The company is very aware that the drainage system is crucial and very important to the landowner that they're crossing. This is a discussion we have all the time going forward. We want to be below the tile system so they're not interfering with the line when they want to repairs or add to the tile system.
Yeah. Well, I just don't want to say the way Winston read that it would have to go 5 foot below a tile line.
And you don't have to.
You don't have to.
That's what's recommended, is to be 5 feet below the tile. But it can come shallower upon his approval.
So
with the county tile, we want to make sure that if we have to go in and repair a county tile, we're not into that electrical.
Yeah, I understand. Okay.
So we want to make sure we have decent separation so when a contractor's out there fixing a tile.
Yeah, and I understand the big tile and so on.
And, if any utility is within 2 feet of where we're going to be digging, all that digging has to then be done by hand.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure we're well outside of that 2-foot buffer, and for safety of contractors and people who are out there. 5 foot gives you a cushion of margin of safety.
I guess I had in my head the normal tile lines in the field, 4-inch tile line, and then you got to be 5 foot below that. That's 8-9 foot all the time. And that's not
feasible.
We're not
saying that. We're only saying that when they cross a county tile, that's when they have to increase their depth of that electrical.
And then just here, just so we understand, the landowner, I know, I can think of a couple instances, absentee landowner, don't really do a lot about farming, know a lot about it. The farm remains untiled, it's undeveloped. I can think of two or three like this. And it's going to get sold, and we don't want to run into a transmission line that's 3 feet deep across there because there was no tile, because that farm was never, and the owners of the farm are not up on this. They don't live here, and how are they going to know? So I think the county needs a leadership role there in either telling them or notifying them that this is our policy. We suggest you do similar with your private tile to deep enough for it.
So a couple points on that, Commissioner, just food for thought, if you will.
Yeah.
We have no policy that dictates how deep anything needs to go on a private property.
You can recommend them.
That's done through a negotiated easement.
But you can recommend.
We can make all the recommendations we want, but that really is a private agreement between.
And that's fine, Sue, I understand that, but we can still say that.
You can get the word out.
Yeah, for sure. I just would caution you into writing things like that into this agreement that dictate what happens between a private landowner and a developer of any kind. That is a separate.
I'm thinking of it more directed at the developer, that he knows that's our suggestion. And then he has to negotiate with the individuals.
So are all those leases signed?
Yes.
They're done?
They're done.
So that's.
We got some curative work we're finishing up.
Right, so that's going to be up to Freeborn Wind to do that. If you as the drainage authority want to direct Winston to go out and just talk to those landlords, say, county's going 5 feet, you can go 5 feet too if you want, that's up to you. And that's, but I agree with Sue that we start to have renewal of the private, the public stuff.
Yeah.
So a couple of, if I may, clarification here. First off, there are a lot of differences between Bent Tree and Freeborn Wind. Yes, it was a gentleman's agreement with Bent Tree, but this developer is aware of the issues there. He's taken additional steps. We have all the tile line information for the participating landowners. There's been drones used to mark and identify where all the tile lines are here. I don't believe they did that in Bent Tree prior to construction. But I would say Sue's got this. Sue, in her comments with regard to what the three-part agreement covers, absolutely.
Okay, I just don't want it to come out that it's got to be more restrictive or something like that, you know.
Yes, we'll revisit and tune it up a little bit. Go from there. So, Winston, you want to come up on your other updates?
Yes.
Short, that first one you handed out.
Yeah.
first one, from Bill, from Freeborn Construction. No, the very first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the short. I can give my.
Here's my.
Another one.
Here's another one.
That's the one we're missing. First thing I'd like to talk about, and thank you for having me at the workshop, is we have an issue out on a ditch crossing. It is in Joint County Ditch J-14, so we're way out in the western edge of the county. It's a joint county ditch with Faribault County. And according to the pictures and the map, it's on the property that's owned by Ross and Kelly Stove. It services their house. It also services the building site, the farm buildings, which is owned by Ronnie Yonke. So there's two primary people that utilize this crossing. According to the pictures, it's a big cement crossing that was more than likely built. We don't have any documentation of when it was built, who paid for it, how it was paid for it. But it's typical WPA crossings that were built in the 1970s when the Great Depression and they put people to work. We've got these all over the county, very robustly. This one just happened to fail. One wing wall fell off this summer.
Copies of this too. But
I think it said in my letter, there's nothing that's being done with this thing by us, accusing us of. And this, they're not voting on anything, so
sure.
Bring it up again before the next couple of meetings. Somebody else, so sure. Bring two more.
What do
you
think?
You take it for the time. So I need to send this letter back again. Send it again. Send it to the county attorney.
Okay.
And say, I don't think they're paying attention to this. Now send it to the cover letter. This is what, you know, I don't think they're paying attention to this. This needs to be addressed.
Because I could stick around for another half an hour, but I don't know that they would even. I don't know if they plan to bring it up or as long as I left.
No, they won't. And it wouldn't be.
This is nothing to do with voting today. It's just a workshop. So there's nothing to report about. When it comes to voting,
yeah.
That's when this has got to be out there.
And so go to the county attorney again. in and say, look, you know, I sent this in, and I don't think anybody's paying attention, so I want to make sure that you know this is electric.
Well, she just, Mariah just slipped him something right afterwards, Matthias, and right when she left, she was like, oh, you know, buddy, here are my notes from the meeting today.
Really?
Yes, and then she walked out. She just did it right now.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
They're totally like, you know.
They have to push it. Can he vote? Well, they have to push it, because if he doesn't.
Well, that's what you're talking about.
Right, that's the.
That's the vote.
You gotta wait for the.
They rarely do.
But you gotta wait.
This is what I'm assuming, that Shellac is gonna work with the county. I'm not gonna sign this until we get that permit.
Can I take a picture of that?
Here, you can have this, right, and I'll make copies of it.
You got another one that you can make copies of?
Yeah, it's on an email I got from Sue, I gotta have it for me. I'm not gonna push it, you know, because there's no permit signed yet.
There isn't.
Do we have a meeting tonight?
Yeah, our township meeting is tonight.
What time is that?
So then the township put it off, they leave it for a while, or?
It's up to me.
It is, it's up to you.
Nobody knows about it except me.
Because there isn't time.
Our meeting is Thursday, that's what we're gonna do if they come and they ask.
It was like, slow down, there's no reason, it's not. And in that, this shows the time schedule of what's gonna happen, and, you know, for sure, the motion for reconsideration, please.
Yeah, were you showing this tonight then?
Oh, that would be useful.
At the meeting?
I didn't even know, I got there late, so I don't know.
That might be useful. This is the schedule, how it is that it's not over yet, and how long it'll take, but, you know, an appeal isn't, I can't take it for granted. But motion for consideration, yeah, so it'll be just a few months.
But I'm gonna talk to Sue before I do it here yet, I want to know how soon she wanted it. And I'm gonna tell her that I'm not really planning on pushing it through until we see a permit.
And have you seen the language of the?
Haven't seen nothing yet.
So that's, I mean, they're sitting there talking about it, the copies in front, the latest one I have is June 23rd. I don't even know if there's anything more than that.
As far as I'm concerned, if the permit is not actually issued, the first draft or whatever.
No.
It's no such thing.
The final isn't coming out for like at least a month. It'll be posted in the docket when it comes up, they just start with the plan.
So, and I gotta wait, I gotta talk to Sue yet, so.
I wanted to show you that.
I'm sorry, I don't do boarding at all.
Sure.
That kind of copy though?
Yeah.
But I wanted to show you that.
Yeah, thank you, take that, and check out that schedule, because at least for sure, the motion for reconsideration, there'll be the decision, then 20 days.
And I'll make a copy of that online.
Then another 10 days, and then it goes to PNC like a month and a half later. So, who knows?
It might be December before you get.
Or January, even.
Yeah.
So until that stage is done, and then it's time for an appeal.
Right.
So, I mean, we don't hear, it's 6 months to a year.
So do they go to the meetings all the time?
Who?
Do you have enemies?
Yeah.
All the time.
Well, Bill's part of it.
No.
He's telling shit.
Isn't he? Like, why would they hire the most worthless people around? God! Like, the most worthless people that we have, they hire. I mean, come on.
I better turn this off, I've got my recorder on. I'm turning this off. I'll cut it out.
Delete that last part.
It would only go to Doreen. But I'll figure out how to delete, it took me. I'm sorry, I've got gray hair, you know, I can't do this.
Really? I don't know how to.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see ya.
Hello.
Hi, I want two of the egg and cheese croissants.
The two for four?
I don't know, whatever they are. I just want two of them.
You want
two?
On
no.
Just egg and cheese?
Yep. And two orange juices, and you only have it in the cartons, right?
Yes.
So I'd also like a little, you know, cup with a cover and some ice in it.
Okay. Okay, how do I do the... Just egg.
Egg and cheese. Cheese.
Egg and cheese.
That should be normal.
It's not egg and cheese.
Okay. Two of those and two orange juices.
Yep.
Is that everything for you?
With the cup and ice, yep.
Yep, for here to go.
To go.
Okay. $8.50, please.
And you don't have the...
Yep.
No chip, but does the thing work?
Right ahead.
It's that.
Run out. You want just one cup, or would you like
just
two?
One, yeah.
Listen.
It's all for me.
Oh, I love the orange juice.
I know. Gotta have it.
Alrighty,
that one is yours, and we will
call your number when it's ready.
It's been a while.
Here's the cup.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
There's covers. Thank you.